TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 125, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hi, Susie from Sherman Oaks.
Peter from West Hollywood.
Marcia in Encina.
Woohoo! All right, Marcia, it's been a while. Welcome back.
Well, I have a new microphone, so now I can actually speak to the public.
And we appreciate it. Let's talk about the news. First up, and the only thing that anybody should be talking about right now, is that Joss Whedon has signed a deal not only to do Avengers 2, but also to do a TV series that will premiere on ABC. Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Technically, he has been greenlit to write a pilot and shoot it. So they did those two in one instead of, you know, they didn't ask to see the script. They were just like, all right, go ahead and shoot the pilot. But everybody's pretty sure it's going to go to series because that's like a cash cow. Why wouldn't you? And along with Joss Whedon and his writing staff, he's also bringing his brother Jed Whedon and Jed's wife. Help me out, Marcia.
Marissa.
Thank you. Because I blanked on her name. So it's going to be a little family affair. Plus, they have one of the writers for the comic books is coming on. I think his name is Leob. Is that right?
Yes, and Jeff Bell, who was on Angel.
Yes.
He was showrunner for Angel. He's going to be part of this also.
Yeah, so he's basically got his writing staff together. He doesn't need all those people to write the pilot with him, so that's pretty much, he's putting together a staff for us to go to series, is really what he's doing. And
from what he's said and from what Mo has said, that they're just so happy with what he's done, they're just letting him play in their universe.
Yeah.
They're all ecstatic. He's got a 3-year contract. In fact, he doesn't even have to work. If he decides at some point, you know what, I have to do Avengers 2 more, the ABC's already said, that's fine. Whatever you want to do.
So we finally
get it. It's the anti-Fox.
Exactly. I was just going to say, finally, we get to this point. But
yeah,
better late than never.
Right. I agree. It basically, it's like the suits appreciate what we appreciate about Joss Whedon. They're like, go ahead, do whatever. Like, if I had millions of dollars or whatever, billions actually, I would have told Joss Whedon to do this a long time ago. Go play. Go do whatever you want. So everybody else is now caught on because he basically made a cash cow. And they're like, can do no wrong. And I am very happy. So I think I literally gasped when I read the news. I was like, what?
You had to reread it a couple times.
I was like, I did one of those. And I was like, television will be great again. All right. So
And the story will be, if it, as long as it doesn't show up on Friday, we're all fine.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I doubt they're going to do that.
Oh, no, I know they're not going to do that. But that was a joke that the Whedons had said. As long as it doesn't show up on Fridays, we all know we're good.
I was about to say, it's ABC. They're going to think that this show is going to be the biggest thing ever. So they're going to put it on a big night. They're not, because usually with Fox, they always assume his show is going to be a loser. And they always throw it on Friday. ABC's behind him this time. So it's in their best interest. If they're already paying him for 3 years, it's in their best interest to make sure to advertise the heck out of it and make sure it succeeds. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely. Their commentary about Avengers was that they knew if they let him just do what he wanted, mm-hmm. that it would be great. He said how nobody ever questioned him. They just left him alone regarding Avengers. And that's what he's looking forward with S.H.I.E.L.D. He's expecting to be left alone and go play.
Well, the earliest we can see this is mid-season, and that's if you got all your fingers and toes crossed. That's the absolute earliest we'd be able to see this. More likely, it will be fall of next year.
Yeah, because they're still putting together the behind-the-scenes crew.
Right. But they still could do, if they wanted to, if ABC was like, let's go, they could still do it mid-season, which would be like in March. But
do we even have a season anymore?
No.
How many series are we going to talk about today where they've already done the finale and it was only 10 episodes or 12?
Yeah.
What is mid-season anymore?
Mid-season, by definition for the network, is after the February sweeps. So after February sweeps, any show that starts after that is mid-season.
Well, it's a technicality, because I'm with Marcy on that. It's like, anymore, I never would have guessed that I'd be watching as much TV as I am right now in the summer.
Cause yeah, that's true.
Because a couple years ago,
there was no summer program.
There was nothing. It was like you just, you know, caught up on old series or watched movies or did whatever. Yeah. But now it's like I'm keeping up on new shows who are, you know, just having finales just in time for turnover for the new fall series to start. I mean, yeah, it's just turning into a year-long event now, which is how it is for a lot of other countries anyway.
That's true.
So we're getting global.
Well, I mean, they basically have figured out people will watch shows in the summer. For a long time, they assumed that nobody watched TV in the summer. And I don't know where they came up with that assumption, but that was pretty much how they figured it, and so they didn't program anything.
Yeah, but I think they're watching.
Well, I think the assumption came from, as I show my age, back in the 60s, before you had the electronics, then again, you also had 39 episodes new every year.
Oh, wow.
The families were gone. Families would disappear in the summer.
Vacations.
Your kids went to camp. Yeah. When they came home, the parents and the families did stuff. Nobody stayed indoors. And it was before air conditioning. So nobody stayed indoors in the summertime. Now everything has changed. Mm-hmm. Now people take their television with them on their laptops, on their mobile devices.
That's true.
Families stay indoors now because we have air conditioning.
We're
and
looking forward to vacations.
We'll do things. And that's what's making a big change, yeah. I think.
Wow. Okay. Sorry. We just went totally off subject, but that was really kind of cool. I actually enjoyed that conversation. But we're going to bring it back and we're going to actually start talking about the shows. So first up, let's talk about True Blood. It was their finale and it was very non-finale-y.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize it was the finale until I looked it up to see what was going to be the next episode. And they were like, yeah, there isn't one. And I went, wait a minute. That was a finale? Really? Like, it didn't feel like it at all.
No, no.
It was their least impressive finale ever because it basically felt like the episode before the finale. It felt like the big episode was coming
up
next.
Yeah,
it was leading up to it. And so I was like, that's not a cliffhanger.
Well, they think it is because, well, okay, within, like, what, the first few minutes of the episode,
they
got rid of Russell.
Yeah, they kill Russell, so why was Russell there?
Okay, so that's the end of the season.
Russell's not the big bad because he didn't do anything.
Well, they were trying to lead him up to doing something. Oh, he might have gotten all the fairies. Ooh. Oh, but then, boom, he's dead. I'm like,
right.
That's really all it took was Eric coming up behind him.
And how old fairy tries to kill him and can't do it?
Yeah, and then all the fairies are like blasting him with their
mojo. And none of them can
do
it.
Nothing happens, and then Eric just comes up and goes, bye, bites him, and he's gone. So I'm like, that was my first clue that this was going to be a kind of sad episode in terms of entertainment value.
Yeah.
But then...
I was just talking about how good it was last week, and now...
I know, right?
Now it's just like, really, this is how you left me?
That is how they left you. The one thing that is going to set it up for next season or next year, of course, is this whole idea now that Jason is seeing the ghost of the parents.
That is the worst storyline ever. Well, okay, it's not worse than the smoke monster.
It's not the worst.
Jason. Okay, it's not worse for the smoke monster, and it's technically not the worst storyline for Jason. But I actually thought that making him sheriff and giving him responsibilities and making him a human being was a good direction for Jason, I liked him.
It was
now.
A good character. He'd grown to that character. And the one thing I didn't like about this turn of events is that I my first thought was, oh, now we're back to Jason of what was it season 2 or 3 that he was doing the thing
with
Merlin and the church and all that. I'm like, really? We've done this before. And
yeah.
Now the motivation is the ghost of the parents, who apparently are like snarky and definitely want the death of vampires, which makes me suspect them being ghosts.
They're not really
his parents.
But the thing that also bothers me is, why isn't he like, huh, I'm seeing people who are dead. Maybe I should tell somebody.
Right, exactly.
Who just follows ghosts without... Like, it wasn't like he was crazy before.
No.
You know, he's just all of a sudden seeing these people who are telling him to do stuff. And he's like, oh, this seems like
he's
a good idea.
It.
Let me just go do that and without saying anything to anybody.
Yeah.
Like,
the only indication we had was when he got knocked out, you know, out in the field. You know, oh, she's like, oh, are you okay? And he's like a little concussion, and that was it. And then suddenly he starts seeing them and everything's like, anti-vamps. Okay. So yeah, I didn't buy into the
that was so
introduction
stupid.
Of that. Yeah, so and then what they go in and they attack the big like scheme of getting into the authority and like the whole.
Well,
like,
I like them getting into the authority. That was fine, I guess, because one, it wasn't Jason's plan. It was like Eric and those
true.
Guys came up with the plan, so
that's
that wasn't
true.
Too bad. It's just then Bill just losing his mind, just gone. He's
mm-hmm.
he's gone. And now he's some blood monster.
He's
Billeth. That's brilliant. Did you come up with that?
I think I read it somewhere, but I laughed because I was like, perfect, it is. It's not Lilith anymore. Now it's Billith ascending from the blood.
Oh, man. That is the worst. Because at first when he died, I kind of was like...
That was kind of cool.
Yeah, I was like, did they just kill Bill?
Right.
Kill Bill. Yeah. I was like, oh, he's dead. I was like, really? They killed him? And I was like, all right. Yeah. And then he comes out of the... I was like, and they kept showing the blood. I was like, is he going to freaking come out of the blood? Yes. And he came out of the blood, and I was like, really?
Well, yeah. I will say that the last two lines of the episode were classic, but the whole season bothered me. It was very uneven. It felt like a bunch of different writers. Nobody knew where they were going.
That's true.
It would start with something that was wonderful and drop it, come back to it and kill it off, and it didn't flow correctly. Mm-hmm. I did like, though, the season when they talked about the shifters, because they haven't talked about them before, and what's happening with the regular community and how they're being affected. I liked that. I liked how they became the heroes of mm-hmm. this season, because yeah. they are the ones who have now told the world what's going on in the underground bunker. They were the ones that they did something. They're the only ones who actually accomplished anything.
That's true.
And if I sound uneven, it's because the damn season has been so uneven. I have been so bored. They could have taken the 10 hours, made it into 6, mm-hmm. and we would have been done. It just mm-hmm. and talking also about Jason, about the parents, he even blew off Jessica, the love of his life.
There's
just too much going on, but there are no good hints about it. And the fairies were so lame. Not just that I've read the books, but if I ignore the books completely and I just go to that storyline, that was a waste of hours of my life I will never get back, because the storyline was garbage.
Okay. Let's wrap this up.
Mention the kiss between Tara and Pam.
Awesome. I was gonna say, people are so split on that. I thought it was awesome too. I thought it was awesome, but I've seen people online, so I'm like, why did they even do that? That was such a waste. I don't see that coming. And I saw it coming.
It was just funny that Tara kept like denying it, and then finally Jessica's like, oh snap, like, oh yeah, she saw that coming too.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, somebody's like, well, I like them as mother daughters. Like, well, they still are, because they're vampires.
That's
so
what vampires do. What was like Eric and what's her name together? You know?
Yeah. Tell me Eric didn't sleep with Godric. He totally did.
Yeah, him and Holly or whatever her name
is. Yeah, and so I'm kind of like, they're vampires. That happens. Mm-hmm. Just deal with it and move on. But okay, I actually liked that part. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the only thing I liked about the finale. Yeah. All right, next. We're done stripping on that, or hitting on that. Newsroom finale. Let's hear from Peter.
I thought it was good. I thought that, kind of like the girls' finale, I don't know if Newsroom knew that they had been picked up, because it feels very much like it could be the series finale.
Yeah.
Because they kind of deal with, you know, they finally have the big scene where Jane Fonda's son, you know, who's kind of the villain of the show, he's done something, and they kind of get him in a situation where, you know, he kind of has to admit that what he's done. And then in the trailers, we had always seen that Jane Fonda was like, you're fired, you know, to McAvoy, you know, but it's like, well, not really, because of the deal. So I thought it was a really good episode. Oh, and I loved, really weird, I don't usually love a lot of the broad comedy, but I thought the whole thing with the Sex in the City bus, like the girl literally getting water from the bus, just like the opening of Sex in the City, like, I thought that was really funny. And I normally don't think that kind of stuff's funny, but I thought it was pretty funny.
Well, so. Just in her rant, and then in the middle of her rant about how she's in love with her coworker, who's on the bus but her coworker. He's on the bus. He's like, are you talking about me? And it's just like, oh my God. Like, that was really good. I thought everything kind of, I mean, but they left stuff for next season.
Oh, totally. They totally did.
Yeah, because everybody is, all the younger characters are all with the wrong people. They paired off with the wrong people, and you're just kind of like, I hope they get together with whoever they're supposed to get together with. And they didn't actually, but they had a really great scene where they call back to the first episode where, her name's not, what's Mackenzie, she shows him the signs, like, he had his breakdown speech, and she shows him the little signs that she actually held up. And he was like, I was having a hallucination. And she was like, I was real. And he was like, why didn't you tell me? He just yells at her.
And I liked that. It's weird, because in the pilot, we see that she was the one who wrote it, but like he gets on the elevator, so she doesn't get to tell him. In the pilot, I was like, eh, it's okay. Like, but actually, I thought it was a pretty good payoff here.
Right, exactly. And that's what I want to take back, because when I was talking about this episode originally, I said that that didn't work. But in the fullness of the season, it totally works. It works really well. So I have to actually give them thumbs up for the writers for realizing that the pilot was not the right place for her to reveal it. The finale was. So I was like, wow, all right, that really worked way better than I thought it would.
So, I agree. And then you were right about the whole characters not being with the right people thing, except that I'm not a huge fan of the guy that Allison Pill's going out with, and now Olivia Munn's character like reveals that she likes him, and I'm just like, really, this guy? Like, but strangely, I actually think she's probably a better match for him.
Right, I thought that too, because one, she's not a pushover.
Right. I agree.
Her character's way stronger, and if he tried to blow her off or do anything like that, she would hurt him. So
yes, I agree. So, yeah, so yeah, no, yeah, I would say thumbs up on the whole season, and you know, I'm a fan of Aaron Sorkin, so I would say better than Studio 60's first season. Well, it's only got
one season,
but I still don't think it's necessarily in the league of like the West Wing, and the West Wing is just so great, but still very good. You know, yeah, what about you?
And now I'm going to be the opposite. Uh-oh. I really don't like Sorkin. I like Newsroom. I want you to know I like it. I think Studio 60 was far better.
What? Yes.
And I hated West Wing.
What?
Throw stuff at me.
Okay. Just because I can't reach you through
so
the microphone.
We can't defriend Marcia here. No, I'm kidding.
But
really,
that's
you
the point.
West Wing. You like Studio 60. Wow, all right. Okay.
I think that Newsroom is really good. However, he's throwing too much liberal, too much... Instead of trying to bring it more centered to try to get more eyeballs. Because there's stuff he talks about I roll my eyes at.
No.
Peter, let her say what she's saying.
She knows not liberal enough.
I just defriended myself out of a group. There were two of us talking politics, and the people never talked, they just yelled. And they yelled the same thing over and over. And that's the thing is, if you want people to change, you have to talk softly and talk with. So there's a lot of stuff that he did in this show that I like. Some things I think he went a little too far on. However, I don't like that Leona at the end comes to Jesus. She should have stayed a bad guy. And she's not going to be a bad guy this coming year. I don't like that. You need to have a bad guy, and a bad guy, a big bad that goes through. She doesn't have to be a big bad that... she is trying to destroy everybody, but just because you need something to balance what everybody else is doing.
Well, I would agree. Actually, I would agree with that. I do think they do, and maybe they're going to come up with something else. But I would agree you do need some kind of conflict. So I think they're going to have a new character or something. You know.
All right.
But if you're trying to show that the media is not telling the truth, if you're trying to show that most of the media is just looking for their pocketbook, you have to keep your boss being the evil person. They didn't.
I don't know. I mean, I trust Sorkin enough that he might be able to... I see what you're saying, but I trust Sorkin enough that I think he might be able to come up with something else that's still just as compelling. I mean, we'll have to see next year.
Yeah,
I'm going to give him benefit of the doubt.
I'm going to call the end of this discussion before we get into actual politics.
I'm not. I just like to talk about the talking about politics.
Well, we have more shows to talk about. So let's move on to Breaking Bad. This is the penultimate. The finale is tomorrow for us.
Well,
half season finale. Yes.
Right.
So, what did you guys think? It's so funny because we were just talking about this last week. There's no way that Mike is going to die before the break. He's going to die. Like, we knew Mike...
We knew it would carry over. Yeah. It would, like, propel us to the next
Right. And we
section.
Knew that Mike was going to die. I just didn't predict it. I actually thought that Walt would have planned killing Mike. That was very spontaneous.
Right, and it actually made it kind of scary for Walt because he shoots him, the car keeps going, you know, I mean, you're very much like, man, if you're going to take Mike out,
you better to
take him out. Exactly. I know, for like half a second.
You can't make a mistake on this.
Yeah. I thought that too, because that's actually, I was yelling that at the television. Like, I was like, you better make sure he's dead, man. You cannot play with that.
However, I thought ahead of time, but you can get the list of names from the woman. Why are you shooting him? And I loved at the end where Mike goes, can I die in peace?
He's just like, leave me alone.
Can you die in peace?
Yep. But it's true. You're right, Marcia, because that was obviously what Walt said too. He's like, oh, and it's weird because he's been so manipulative and conniving this season, like more so than ever. That when he said that, you know, he kind of paused, and when Mike was like slowly dying on a log, he's like, oh, I realize now I could have asked what's her name, you know, to get the names. And it was like, he had a look on his face, and I'm like, is that a look of someone who's actually kind of remorseful, or is he just like, oh, well, that might have been the less messy way to do it? Because no matter
probably
what.
Probably a little both.
Yeah, you know.
Because the thing is, the moment that Mike started taking his money from the cut and basically treated Walt like a child, that was when Walt decided he was going to kill Mike. Like,
oh, and
he
handcuffed him in that whole thing? Oh,
yeah. He had already decided he was killing Mike.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly didn't like the legacy tax thing. I mean, right. Or whatever they called it. You know?
Right. It, not just that, but he didn't like the way that Mike dealt with him. And Mike's problem was he knew that Walt was kind of dangerous, but he thought that Walt was dangerous because he was incompetent and got other people killed. But that's not what it was. He didn't realize how much planning went into killing Gus. He didn't realize how dangerous Walt really is. So that's actually Mike. Mike is really good at reading people, but he sucks at reading Walt.
Yeah, well, he's built it. Mike's built his legacy on, you know, just the slow, methodical planning of everything. So when you see someone like Walt, he's just like, look at this, you know, he watched him come from nothing to this and see, you know, how, you know, Fring got him involved in this whole thing. So Mike's still thinking,
oh, he's
I've
just
been here longer, I know better, and it's like, and I got it under control, and absolutely no idea that Walt's just such
Walt
a
is on hinge.
Oh,
yeah, Walt's a solely, and he's not treating him like that. And that was like, every time Mike talked to him, I was like, you're just getting a little bit closer to Walt killing you. Like,
I think it was right at the beginning when Luis Ferrer, who I love I love him as an actor, so he shows up as the Clan. And they're out there meeting with the
he's like,
say my name.
Say my name.
I'm like, you might as well just say my name, biatch. You know, I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, don't say it. Oh, of course you're going to say it.
You're
sure.
Damn right.
That was so awesome.
Yeah.
That was so awesome. And the thing is once they realized that he killed Gus, that gave him a lot more credibility. Mm-hmm. And that's why he said it. Like, he would have never said it before. But that was the whole thing. You're like, who are you? He's like, you know who I am. No, I don't. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. Like, that all... awesome. I will bring up something. I was discussing this at work. And one of the guys from work was saying he didn't like this episode. And I was like, what? And he said the reason he didn't like it, and I actually have to give him a point on this, is that he thought that Mike had been so smart for so long and had planned everything methodically really well that at the end, in his retirement plan, he gives all his money to one guy who's the lawyer to the criminals he's trying to keep quiet. And so it's one step away from all his money. Mm-hmm. And he puts his granddaughter's money in the same... in the same group of deposit. Like, I could see him putting all the criminals in the same deposit boxes, but he should have kept his granddaughters separate that he did, you know, like some other guy or third party. And he was just like, it was just, that was messy for Mike. Like, that didn't make sense that he would have made such a simple mistake. And
good
I was
point.
Like,
I can see what he's saying.
Yeah, I agree with him on that.
And what's funny is, actually, now that you mentioned that parlays really well, because one of the things that had me kind of question the episode was the one part where Mike is basically saying, I gotta go because they're on to me, this whole thing, they got my lawyer or whatever, and or my banker, and he's like, I need to get my bag. It's, you know, here's the going away bag.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jesse's like, oh, I'll go get it. And he's like, no. And when Walt's like, I'll get it. I'm like, yeah, that's the stupidest thing you could ever do, is have Walt go get your bag so you can escape scot-free. No. I mean, this was Walt's opportunity. That was it. And then it was just even better that he found the gun, you know?
Yeah, because he trusted... The thing is, he was trying to protect Jesse. I get that.
Yep.
But Jesse was not going to try to kill
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Jesse would have given him the bag and been like, good luck, man. I'm sorry it didn't work out. Yeah. Great. But the fact that Walt went for it, I was like, nope, that's it.
That's a bad... Yeah. I would have had the lawyer do it.
Yeah.
I would have never trusted Walt.
Yep.
That's a good point. All right. Okay. But still, thumbs up. I cannot wait for the finale.
Oh, can't wait.
Yes.
I want to throw two things out very quickly. One, they've mentioned that this has only been a year since
I know.
He had his cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nope.
The way his personality has changed, but or has his personality really changed? Were there symptoms of this in the first season?
Probably.
I think there were.
Everything was leading up to this. Like, this is not a surprise. If you've been watching the show from season one, this is not a surprise.
Other thing I'm going to throw out is, at the first episode, at the beginning, you see him in a parking lot. You see that he's got rifles that he's gotten from somebody. And it looks like he's going after someone.
Right.
If you notice this past season very much, and previous seasons, they talk about Jesse James.
Yeah.
And how was Jesse James taken down
by his
close friend?
Well, also they talk about Scarface. My prediction is that's going to be the end. Like, he's on the last leg of whatever he's doing, and he's decided his choices are to go to prison or be killed or whatever, and he's like, screw this, I'm going out like a real criminal. Yeah. So he wants to go out.
What will Jesse's part in it be, though?
Yeah, that's the question. All right, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk about Grimm, and I think this is episode 3. Yes?
Okay. Yeah.
And this is the episode we've been waiting for. He finally, can we put it, that's with capital F.
Underlined
several times. He finally tells his partner what the heck is going on.
Well, and the way they did it, actually, I liked it. I liked the episode because I didn't know how they were going to do that, you know,
right.
at the point. But the fact that they set it up perfectly for it to be Hank's old friends, who he obviously trusts and have known for years, that obviously made it easier, kind of cushioned
right.
it. And then the fact that it was after Hank had had enough time to stew and freak out and get paranoid over the whole thing.
Right.
And then for Nick to be able to say at that point, yeah, dude, I know we're in this like this really crazy situation right now, and just know I see it too, and I thought I was crazy as well, you know, this whole thing, but let's kind of deal with it later.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that all of that helped set Hank up to not just like run screaming from the building kind of thing, which I think would have been an option.
Yeah.
So I liked the fact that they did that. So at the very end, when Hank was, you know, like, he's like, dude, no, he's like, I'm actually okay with it, because at least I know I'm not the only one that's crazy if that's the
yeah.
case.
Yeah, because he was
like,
ready to
good.
Quit.
Yeah.
Hank was on the verge of just being like, I have lost my mind. I'm seeing stuff.
Yep.
I'm totally just insane. I'm going to quit.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, don't quit.
Yeah.
He's like, I got something to tell you.
Yeah.
So that was
well
good.
Handled.
Yeah. And so now they're both, but then what I'm actually looking forward to now is the education
exactly.
process
yeah.
so where he's like, okay.
Hey, you remember Monroe?
Not just that,
yeah.
but just like telling
yeah.
him, it's like, these are these kind of beasts, and this is how you kill this guy, and this is how you do this thing. And
Do you think he'll show him the trailer at all? Or is that just between him and Monroe?
I'd like to keep
it just between him and Monroe.
I think he'll show him the trailer.
You think?
Because
we'll see. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I think he is, because
Hank is going to be Xander.
Well, because the whole
everyone
thing,
needs a Xander.
He needs to show him. Well, because now he already knows he's a Grimm.
Yeah.
He doesn't quite know what that means, and so he has to explain it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the books that actually explain all the creatures are all in the trailer.
But then don't you think too that I know we're not talking about this episode per se, but it's building because I like it, because then it does totally open up whole new pathways, because now if it's not just Nick, it's not just Nick and maybe Monroe and Rosalie helping fighting the bads, the big bads and the Wessons. Then with Hank on board, with probably double the firepower, it makes you wonder, what are the big bads going to be now? You know, it's like they're going to have to level that up as show creators. Because Nick's been able to basically beat everyone
thing is, it's kind of like how Buffy works, in that people would come to town thinking they could kill a Slayer, but then she had like this whole crew of people backing her up, and they were like, wait, and so it was different.
So they have to do that
now. It's the same kind of deal, and I like it. Only thing is, I want someone to take his gun away. Not Hank's, but
Nick's
gun away, because when he has a gun, he fights like a cop.
It's too easy.
And it's not just too easy. He doesn't use his powers. And then when he when you take the gun out of his hand, all of a sudden his powers, you see him fight like a Grimm.
I think there'll be a lot of the man-to-man and stuff like that.
And that's pretty much why I tune in. If I want to see a cop shoot somebody, I'd watch you know, some other cop show.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Well, I think it's also that when he is a cop, when he's not a Grimm, he's an idiot. I mean, what an idiot to leave gun casings behind, to drop his gun, to... He turns into a human, into a regular, everyday person when he has the gun
on.
And
he makes mistakes. Yeah, and he makes mistakes that you can follow with forensics. If he actually used his medieval weapons like he's supposed to...
No one can trace those.
No, yeah, you're not going to trace those, and he would take them back with him. He wouldn't leave them, and then they're like, who the heck killed somebody with a mace, you know? It's like...
Yeah, no, that's true. So I think that'll increase the dynamic as far as how he deals with the Vessen, what kind come after him. But then... What I loved about this episode too is, of course, two great like character actors that joined the game just for this episode, at least Mark Pellegrino and also John Piper Ferguson.
That's so, like, the two of them together, like, the universe should have exploded.
I was so excited about that. The only thing I wasn't very interested in, of course, was unfortunately the Juliet amnesia thing and how she apparently remembers everybody, including Monroe, and the dinner they had that night, but not Nick. But that's,
right.
We obviously
It's very much as someone predicted, unfortunately. Yeah. It's like the vow, and I'm like, oh, please don't be that.
Yeah.
So hopefully...
Well, you remember when she was in her coma, little
she
things started to erase.
Yeah, I know.
And
I wasn't...
he was the first person to be erased.
And Rosalie told him, Rosalie told him that was what was happening with the spell or the whatever. So
I understand that, but it's not that interesting to watch.
Me too.
I'll say
what I find interesting is about Captain Raynard.
Ooh,
because he's not just a prince. He doesn't seem to get along with the family.
Well, because apparently he's not
with the rulers.
Yeah. Because apparently he's not legitimate. He is not a legitimate son. Yes, that's the problem.
And he's kind of on his own out there up in Portland and you know, doing their work for him, but really what does that entail and what is his plan with Nick? Why is he, quote, trying to maintain, you know, why is he reining in or keeping the Grimm on a leash?
I actually think he likes him.
I know people are speculating that. I think so too. I think it's one of those things where for so long it's the reverse, like, Stockholm syndrome, you know, where he's been kept, he's close enough to Nick for so long and observed himself for so long that
now,
there's at least a little bit of respect for him.
Yeah.
But where that will go and his own interests at heart. We'll
and I think because of the whole prince thing, he's used to being responsible for his minions or whatever, and I think he feels a responsibility for Nick. So, yeah, I think right now he's actually trying to protect him. I want the moment where... I don't understand why Nick doesn't see him. Like...
Because he's that good, and they've mentioned that before, where, you know, somebody is,
the control,
and the fact that the only time we saw him lose control at all was because of the potion from last
week.
That's
true.
And that was barely, you know, it's like you saw a little bit of his face come through, but that was it. Otherwise, he just writhed on the floor shirtless, which was so awesome. but other than that...
And that's the thing, I don't think that he likes Nick. He respects him, but he looks at him as a way to use as a weapon against his own kind.
Yeah,
that's what I see, because he figures they're not going to see a Grimm coming after them, since the royalty uses Grimms to keep Vessens in control.
Right.
And isn't it interesting that Mom knows this?
Yeah.
After this huge secret last year about the royalty using the Grimms and other families like them to control the Vessens.
Knows
this?
Well, of course she knows this because she's educated in the ways of the Grimm. It's just that Nick didn't know because nobody told him anything. But anyway, we got to move on. So thumbs up for Grimm.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, Warehouse 13. And as I look at this, I realize I didn't finish watching the episode because I got angry and stopped.
Because of the Lewis Carroll with the mirror thing again and the Artie.
It was just the Artie thing. It's
like
we got to the Artie storyline.
Dr. Vanessa.
And I was just like, you know what? Because I watched the open. Yeah. I watched the opening and everybody saying, you know, oh, you got a new coat and everybody teasing him and all that stuff.
He's got a date with Dr.
And he's got a date. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then they got part of the story was out. And then as soon as we switched back to Artie, I was like, this show has made me dislike Artie.
I know, right? Because we mentioned even last couple episodes, it was like the whole thing with Artie and Brent Spiner's monk or whatever it is, you know, the father. It's like, really, we just weren't interested in that part of the storyline at all. And now we know. We got the fruition of that, though. Did you see it to that point?
No, I'm just real. I realized that right now is that I didn't watch it all.
So what you missed is the fact that with all of the... Did you see, like, Alice Liddon, she's the one that, like, the crazy Alice from Wonderland who got out in the mirror and was possessing.
I saw that.
So she had the broken mirror, and so she did body jumping, basically, to get away from Micah and Pete. And they followed her, and she ended up going to where Artie and Dr. Vanessa were because she was after Artie. So that's what. So she did everything she could to get to Artie, and then so finally she tries to attack him, and they figure it out. The team figures it out, and so everyone kind of converges because Claudia and Jinx find the one weapon that will discombobulate her enough to get her into the mirror again or whatever to capture her. Yeah, to capture her again. So they're all together in this one location now.
Oh, that's actually unusual.
It is. So it was good. But then there was like a crowd of people and all this stuff. So it's like, where is she now? Because she's body jumping to get away. So they finally do get her. But the last person she body jumps to is Claudia. And Claudia's, they're in a, like, in a, like,
oh,
a
so they do the whole knife thing.
Yes. And so, of course, they capture her at the last second, and it's all resolved. So that took care of that storyline that we thought was so ridiculous. So that's done.
Thank you.
I would be happy to hear that.
Well, because the thing is, Artie, I thought, was irrationally afraid of Claudia, which made no sense.
It didn't. So that
I was like, dude, yeah. You know that Claudia's not going to come at you with a knife under normal
circumstances. We knew there had to be some other reason for it. So that was what that was. So that took care of that storyline. And then I'm trying to think if there was Jinx and Claudia when they were in the warehouse looking for the item. What's her name? We always forget her name. The one that works at the house that can read the auras.
Nobody knows her name.
I know, we keep forgetting. She was there and
she's an aura reading girl.
Yeah, and she saw the kind of the swap when he was feeling pain. She could see it, you know, kind of reflected in Claudia. So she knew that she's like, dude, you're going to talk to her? So finally he admitted to Claudia about the whole thing.
The body swap.
The body swap stuff.
So now she's like, oh my God, freak out, whatever. But yeah. I mean, I don't mind that storyline. I think that storyline's pretty good. But I'm glad that Artie can stop acting like an irrational idiot.
But the thing that's continuing with the storyline is who is it that's actually replacing the artifacts with the little black stone thingies and all that. So that's continuing on. So
we already know who that is.
Well, we know who it is, but they need to find out who he is and catch him. Because he hasn't told any of them who it is. Because remember, he stole that stupid time device thing, and he's the only one talking to Brent Spiner. Crazy. All right.
Yes. This is what happens when secrecy takes over a team. It gets stupid.
It does. It does.
So all right. Warehouse 13 has not been rocking my socks this season.
I would say it's like thumbs sideways.
Thumbs sideways. Yeah. is anybody else watching Alphas? Just me, alone, silence. All right, so next up, I'm going to talk about Alphas for 5 seconds because we didn't talk about it last week. And Allison, I think, is the only other person who watches Alphas with me. Mm-hmm. And you really should watch the show.
I tried getting into it. I just, man, for some reason, I don't like some of the actors on it. They bother me.
They get better. They do. I mean, I had the same problem in season one. I did. But, I mean, whatever. So you could skip to season two. Season two is much better. All right. So this season, the main storyline is that there are two... It's very X-Men-y because there are two factions. There are the Alphas that follow Dr. Rosen because he is the voice of reason and he works with the government and he basically is trying to save lives and he's like the good guy. And then you have John Piper Ferguson, who is the leader of the other side of the Alphas, who are basically trying to... Basically, the whole Magneto thing. They think that only Alphas should exist, and they are the top of the food chain, and all the other people are nothing.
Inferior.
And he's trying to do a whole takeover of Alphas, take over the world. Mm-hmm. And he feels that killing humans mean nothing. And also, he's trying to come up with ways to enhance Alpha abilities. He came up with this strobe lighty thing that basically... It sounds silly, but basically, if you sit... Yeah. You sit in front of the strobe light that he created, then all your alpha abilities get maxed. Like, you become 10 times more powerful than you were before. Mm-hmm. So, that's his thing. He's consolidating his power. He's recruiting more alphas. And then he wants to take over the world. But John Piper Ferguson's great. He's a great villain. Like, this one, he's an immortal. He found out he couldn't die in the Civil War. And... Since then, he's gotten all that experience, and he's been using it to recruit people to his cause. And he's got a lot of money, because he's had time to gather a lot of money, and it's pretty cool.
Do we know where the Alphas get their mutant powers, if you want to call it that? Or is that
it's just they're born with it.
It just is.
It's a gene thing. Okay. It's like, and that's why one of the characters, him and his wife, were talking about having a baby, and he's afraid to have a baby, because he thinks that his baby will be an Alpha.
Okay.
And so they've discussed that a little bit. Okay. And they added a new character this season. It's a blonde girl.
Oh, you guys were talking about her before. She's awesome. Like her. She's
well, she's just like, I should be on the team because I'm awesome.
Yeah.
And they were like, maybe you should be on our team because you're awesome. And I was like, yes, I like her a lot. But basically, one of the characters that I dislike the most, they've made it to where everybody hates her too. So, okay. So I think that you could probably jump in at season two and not be too lost, though the finale was kind of specific. And then maybe go from there. Because I think all the problems that I had in season one are fixed in season two. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Anyway.
Well, I'll put it on the list. That's very long.
That's your long list. All right, next up, let's talk about White Collar.
Yay.
And
that was the high point.
What did you think of this episode?
I thought it was funny as hell. The photo shoot was just fall out of your chair awesome.
The photo shoot where, what is it, Neil's ex-girlfriend...
Sarah, who's the insurance adjuster.
And yep. Peter with his wife there, because she's like, if you're doing this, I'm being here. They all coach them. They coach Peter and Sarah are supposed to be having sex, and they're photographing it. And so listening to them coach them
was just great.
Oh, and they just were so awkward.
They were very awkward. But that was the best part. They were like the posable dolls. And so here's Elizabeth sitting in the chair, just like drinking her champagne, just going, oh, you know, honey, you're a passionate man. You could do much better than this. This is just terrible. So she gets up to give him advice. Meanwhile, you know, Neil's outside with the camera, supposedly taking the secret shots from outside. He's popping in going, yeah, you know what? Do that thing with your legs, Sarah. You know, they're just like, it's so cracking up. Because the two of them are just like, yeah, we get it. And they're like trying to get it. And she's like, whisper in his ear. Oh, he loves it when you whisper in his ear. I'm just dying because I was laughing so hard. And then finally, they got the take. So that alone was worth it because that was just such a great, clever, fun scene.
That was so much fun.
Fun scene. And it was needed. And the great part was, it wasn't just gratuitous. It was actually needed for the plot because the first time I watched it twice, and so the first time I watched it I was a little confused with what they were doing to try and catch the bad guy in this one, and then I sat through that whole scene about them proposing this whole
thing, once you understand the plan, then it makes sense.
Like, okay, yes, that's totally right, because you know Sarah is more important to the fixer girl who's like really the baddie of the show this time. You know, Sarah's account is more important than this other thug's account.
Right.
You know, they play her against the middle there. So I thought that was cleverly done. The plot.
And I also like the fact that she realized what they were doing.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. She was like, those pictures were totally fake. Yep. I realized that you set me up and you picked the... And she's like, I'm not mad that you picked the FBI over me. I understand why you did that. And she's like, I'll still be your client. And I was like, okay.
Very, very professional, very business.
And then, of course, the foreshadowing of her giving Peter her card. And I was like, that's not going to be good.
She's coming back, honey.
But I thought that she's a good character that I thought that they made her interesting.
They did. And it was funny because when I watched it and they set her up, you know, she's the fixer. Of course, I had to think back to person of interest.
Exactly. I thought the same thing. So I happen to like the person of interest fixer better.
Me too. I do too. But this one I thought was kind of a clever nod to that. I'm like, as soon as they said she was a fixer, I'm like, oh, I know all about fixers and what they do. So that helped. So I thought that was good. The whole thing about, again, dealing with Neil and Sam and this, you know, so of course you have Treat Williams come in and be, you know, he's Sam and he's meeting Neil on his terms. But what I liked about it is how Neil, you know, Sam basically says, you know, the FBI can't help you, which is funny because Mozzie suggests that the FBI help
that
him.
Is and so, Neil's it's like, what is this, upside down
day? Yeah, Neil's like, I am somewhere pigs are flying, you know, but it was funny because then he realized that he couldn't. And I like how Neil, as usual, because, you know, I love that tension between the two of them, as I know Peter does.
But he, I will give him credit. He actually threw it out to Peter and said, what if this situation happened? What would you do?
Right. And that was good. But then what I liked is earlier in the episode, though, when we realize that for Sam to not, because Sam's basically told Neil already, you know, how do you think Ellen died? It's because her name was somewhere in some FBI report.
Right.
And so Neil kind of played that against Peter. And then actually that's how this whole thing worked for this particular story of the week, is to keep it off the book, so to speak.
Right.
And so I love how the writers were able to kind of parallel those two.
And I also like the fact that Peter knows Neil well enough to know when Neil is lying
to
him.
Exactly, yeah.
And knowing when Neil is hiding something from him. And, of course, he's got his freaking leg monitor, so it's not like he can hide from Peter. So Peter just shows up and he's like,
dude,
what are you doing? You're doing something you're not supposed to be doing,
but
and I can
Neil's
tell.
But Neil's always thinking a step ahead because he knows Peter well enough, so we know.
Well, he's not going to realize that Peter's watching him.
Oh, yes, he is. He knows it all the time. We've seen so many episodes where, in the end, you think Peter has won, but then you step back and
Neil has
planned it that way.
Except that Peter does win sometimes.
Well, he does. He caught Neil twice.
I'm like, he does win.
They're perfectly matched. I think what happens is they hopscotch each other. And so you never know. One of them always has the upper hand and you just don't know which one, but it works out perfectly for both. So
true.
Yep. So,
all right.
Good.
So thumbs up. We have how many episodes left? We have White Collar.
I don't remember, but I know for sure next week. Oh, tomorrow, was it this week's episode? There's boxing included, and it means Neil without a shirt, so all's fair in the world.
All right. Next up, we're going to talk about Rookie Blue. And Peter, did you get a chance to go back and watch the old episodes?
No, I still didn't get to do that, but I watched the episode last night, though. But I do need to still catch up. But I thought it was good. Although I keep wondering, how many episodes has this show got left for the season?
Probably, it feels like maybe one more, because it's about to go into... It has to only be maybe one more, because we're going to go into the premieres of the new shows.
Oh, right, because September. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So it's like maybe, at the most, two more. Because NBC premieres its stuff on the... Not the 25th, but the week before, like the 18th of September. So at the most, we have two more. We probably only have one more. So what'd you think?
I liked it. My only real issue was, I liked it, which was, you know, so many television shows do this, you know, your Grey's Anatomy or whatever, cop shows, where you have an incident that happens and you keep going back in time to see it from the different characters' point of view.
Right.
But of course, I was really tempted to almost fast forward, because I really wanted to just get to the big scene, because, you know, when they first reveal that, obviously, the guy's got a gun, and he's in the cell, and he's putting the gun to the other guy's head, I was kind of like, oh, what are they going to do? But then, of course, after the commercial break, we have to go back in time again. I'm just like, oh, come on. I was like, I just want to see what happens, you know? But I didn't do that. And I thought, obviously, I think certain stories are more interesting than others. Like, interestingly, I thought the one... First, I don't remember the character's names, but the one who finds out that he might be a father, I thought his was pretty good.
That's like, Diaz.
Like, McNally's, I mean, so basically what, she didn't want her fellow officer to get in trouble for being drunk or whatever? That was, who cares? Like, I was like, I don't care about this at all.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was definitely the weakest, because all her secrecy, because you see it from all the other characters' point of view, and you're wondering, what the heck secret does she have? And her secret is just that one of their friends showed up to work drunk, and if anybody finds out, he's in trouble, and I don't care.
Yeah,
I like the guy, but I don't care enough about that.
Right, because when the episode begins, and they're like, oh, is it something top secret? And she's like, you just, you know, leave me alone. And I was like, oh, what's going on? And it's like, oh, that's all it is? It's like, come on, you know? But overall, good. And I like the moment they took the guy down, the little SWAT guy, bam! And you're just like, oh, you know, like, that was pretty good.
Well, the thing is, I don't know why Diaz didn't realize that was, because you could hear the guys in SWAT coming up behind them. And the thing is, what's weird, well, because I'm, as a side note, I'm watching this show called Flashpoint, which is basically about the SWAT team, and they negotiate people out of these situations. And their first option is not to just shoot the guy in the head. It's usually not the first thing that they do. But these guys, like, he turned his back. He finally got the guy to calm down. He got the guy to make a phone call, which would mean he would have to let go of his prisoner to make the phone call. And as soon as he turns around to pick up the phone, the SWAT dude shoots the other dude in the head. And I was like, dude. Because I've been watching Flashpoint, that feels wrong to me. Like, it's like, that's not how they do that. And both shows are in Canada, so I know that the protocol is the same. So, anyway.
Who's Canada? I forgot about that. You're right. Yeah, they're both Canada. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, could I ask, is this the series, because I haven't watched it yet, was this when we were talking last week or the week before, who was it that mentioned mini grenades?
Oh, that was Peter.
Was that for this show where you're like, why don't they just have mini grenades they can just throw in the car so they can't get away?
that was Peter.
Okay.
I've used my Grand Theft Auto knowledge. I will easily take care of those guys.
I still think it's a great idea. Okay.
Oh, and that reminds me, they only mentioned the fact that Epstein got beat up really short, because apparently after his beating... Mm-hmm. He took time off to heal.
He supposedly was going to the doctors or something.
Right. And then he was all beat up later. Yeah. Like,
okay.
What?
Yeah.
But what he did is he just didn't show up to work.
Okay.
Until he healed enough that it was very, you know, he was like, oh, he basically told everybody he played a basketball game and got knocked down. That's what he told everybody, like, by the time he healed a little bit. But the police chief was like, ER nurses talk, and they talk to me, and the police chief knew everything. He was like, not only did he know who beat him up, he knew why they beat him up, and all this other stuff. And he's like, dude, what is wrong? He's like, you were dating the sister of the guy you killed. What kind of twisted thing is going on in your head?
The only thing that I thought was interesting, well, I mean, no, I agree with you, but the only thing that I thought was a good callback was that in that scene, the guy's like, you know, you're right, my personal life is my personal life. And then he walks away, and you're like, mm-hmm. All right, whatever. At the end of the episode, the chief of the department is also put in the same situation where he's like, look, my personal life has nothing to do with that.
Right.
So I thought actually that was a nice callback.
Yeah, that's true. The only thing is the investigator was trying to say because he had a baby at home, he couldn't do his job. But he's like, seriously?
Oh, no. His is way more understandable. I'm just saying I thought that was a nice that they brought those two characters, both moments in the show.
Saying, except...
Right, he's brought into question.
That I think that Epstein's personal life speaks to some sort of psychosis going on. So
Epstein's had so many problems before. He's always had weird issues with life.
Yeah, but I really think... I mean, having little weird issues is different than sleeping with the sister of the guy you killed. And then he got beat down because people didn't like the fact that he's sleeping with the sister of the guy he killed. And basically, anything that gives people license that they feel that they can beat up a police officer, that you can't do that. And so that's why the police chief was like, we can't have this kind of situation going on.
Again, the mini grenades.
There you go. I'm telling you, man, someone's got to patent those. Someone call the army now.
All right, so one thing I want to tell people about, so we plug before the end of this podcast. Well, wait, thumbs up for Ricky Blue. We like it.
Yeah.
We have to talk about the fact that Doctor Who premieres tonight for us.
Tonight.
Yep.
So I'm very excited for the premiere. Also, you guys should go see the little, there's something called Pond Life.
Little 5 episodes.
Oh, yeah. How'd you know about that? Oh, you stole my thunder.
I'm sorry. It's Doctor Who. Hello. Good luck on that. My Twitter feed, half of it is Doctor Who.
That's right. That's how I saw it too, my Twitter feed. It was like, have you seen Pond Life?
Oh,
and I was like, so you should see Pond Life before you watch the premiere. It's like a little, it literally is 5 minutes long. And it's basically what's been going on in between the season, between the Doctor and the ponds. Hmm. That was kind of weird with the little fight.
I haven't seen it yet. Don't tell me.
It is adorable, and they're not even a minute apiece.
Right.
Yeah, it's really short.
There's no opening credits. It's just you fall into it, and it's absolutely adorable.
Just little snippets here and there.
Yeah, you should find out what's going on. Yeah.
Rory get killed or Shane?
No, but Rory has a lunchbox.
Yes. Rory and his lunchbox is so bizarre.
His Roman centurion lunchbox. It's great.
That was weird. Why does he have a lunchbox?
Because it's the Romans. The man who waited. He's the guy he had. Remember the whole episode where he was like, he lived forever basically waiting for her from like the...
I understand what that is. What's that going to do with the lunchbox?
There was Roman soldiers on it.
Oh.
I haven't seen this and I know I can...
I didn't realize what she was saying, that the actual lunchbox had Romans. For some reason, I was thinking she was meaning that sentence differently than she did.
No, it's literally a little Romans on his
own. Oh, okay. I'm fine now. but yes, you should go see Pond Life. It's 5 minutes long. It's a web series. See it before you watch the premiere. It's cute. It's great. The other thing is I watched it. I just forgot. I watched Copper, the premiere. Did you guys watch that?
I watched the premiere.
I did.
And I was so not impressed.
I wasn't either.
Me either.
I wanted to be, but I wasn't.
I can't believe it's British.
Me too.
It can't be British.
Exactly.
It's not British.
Well, it's supposed to. It's like a British-US hybrid.
Yeah, but the writers are American.
But they really wanted it to have a British feel to it. That was the point. But it just...
It doesn't. Why would I watch a cop show... Ugh. Actually, apparently we're going to talk about one more show right now. We're going to talk about Copper. So the one thing that I think that's weird about this show is, why would you watch a cop show before they have any technology to do any forensics or figure out who the murderer is? Like, I don't understand how you're supposed to...
But remember, in the first episode, the doctor...
Right, he's like inventing forensics.
Exactly, because he's like, look, I took this is the life, this is the real size version of what the dent is, and he goes and finds that it's the cane that guy used. I'm like, okay, there's that.
Yeah, but what are the odds of that happening?
Exactly.
Like, that's insanity.
And I just wasn't impressed with our lead. I mean,
he's okay.
But there was just no dynamic, there was nothing dynamic there that I was
engaged with. I think part of it is he's trying to pretend to be American. Anytime a British actor for the first time tries to do an American accent, a lot of times it doesn't work. Like,
they're
so focused on that, it takes away from their acting.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of the issue was, having grown up in New York, that up until the late 1800s, people spoke whatever accent they came off the boat with.
Exactly.
And the locals spoke with a Cockney accent because that's why New Yorkers talk the way they do.
Yeah.
Even today. And I'm watching it and I know a lot of the history and it bores the hell out of me. And yet I'm watching repeats of last year's Luther on BBC America and going, now that's a cop show.
Yeah,
exactly.
Guns either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a quality difference. And also, I watched the third episode. I'm taking it off my DVR.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, wow, could anything have been crappier done than Torchwood America?
Oh, wow.
Let's
stop.
No, but I mean, that's the problem is that it's like they were trying to make it for the Americans.
And
so they dumbed it down.
Yeah.
So what you expect from BBC, you didn't get.
Well, anyway, let's stay on topic, which is the copper thing.
Thumbs down. Thumbs down on copper.
I'm going to have to agree with you because it recorded the second episode and I couldn't get myself to hit play.
Me neither. I didn't even bother. I just went, no, that's all right.
Yeah, I think
wasn't
that's
any better. It just got worse. Okay.
Well, I was hoping somebody else was going to watch it. And
thanks
some,
for taking the bullet for us, Marcia.
No. I was hoping somebody else was going to watch the second episode or the third and be like, "Oh, it's better." It's like
I just
figured it wasn't going to be me.
Yeah.
All right, so Copper is not going to make it into our rotation.
Nope.
Thumbs down.
I will tell you since you're not going to see it.
Yep.
I mean, the quasi bad guy gets his comeuppance. But even then, I was bored.
That's pretty sad.
All right, so we're really done with the podcast this time, I promise. All right. if you have any feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We are on Facebook. You can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, and Weedonopolis, and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye, guys.